House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:15 on March 30th. Present today, we have Representative Hughes, Representative Tilton, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. We have one bill on the calendar today, that being House Bill 47, PERS contributions by municipalities. Today it looks like we've got both the bill sponsor and his staff, Paul LeBeau. Why don't both of you come up to the table and you didn't think you were going to get it passed, did you? Yeah. Please state your name and affiliations for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing HB 47, which is the PERS contributions by municipalities. For the record, this is Representative Neil Foster, House District 39, and with me I have my Chief of Staff, who will be presenting the bill.
Yeah. Hello, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, Paul LeBeau, staff to Representative Foster. I think if you would like, I would start with the explanation of changes in the Community and Regional Affairs CS. In Section 1 of the bill, we changed the rules for applying the new base salaries to exclude one specific community, which was ATCA. The language change took the form of an additional requirement in order for the 2012 floor reset to take effect. And in this scenario, in order to have your floor reset, you not only have to lose 25% or more of your population, but you also have to have your salaries in FY12 be less than they were in FY08. And so that's the change that happened in Section 1. Section 2 was a bit more of a substantive change, and what was changed in Section 2 was instead of applying the new interest rate only to those populations that had lost 25% or more and basing that new rate on the federal discount rate, we applied the universal rate of the language is the actuarially determined rate of earnings for the retirement plan, so that's the 8% everybody's familiar with, for any community who's paying under the floor for their PERS system. So basically, if your base salaries are below what they were in 08 and you're required to pay that 08 amount, then any delinquent amount will have an interest rate of 8% added to it rather than 12%. If we go back to the original, I believe it was Senate Bill 125 that enacted that, the extra interest rate was in turn to be punitive, so it was the actuarial amount, the amount required to make the system whole, plus 4%. It was the feeling of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee that communities that are already paying more than their base salaries into the system didn't really need to have a punitive rate applied to them. The simple 8% that would make the system whole would be sufficient. And if there's not any questions on the changes, I'll go into the broader aspects of the bill.
Any questions for Paul?
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. LeBeau, what made the 12% punitive?
Because it was the, if you look at the original text of the bill, which is actually, or of the section itself, which is mostly what Section 2 is without the changes, it says that the interest rate shall be assessed at the outstanding contributions of 1.5 times the most recent actuarially determined rate of earnings for the retirement system. So the actuarially determined rate is the rate required for the system to be whole. So the 1.5 times that half times was the punitive part of the rate.
Mr. Chairman,
follow up.
But I understand that, but what was the policy call that was made?
It was a disincentive. I was actually here when SB 125 went through. It was supposed to be an incentive to pay your bills on time. And so under this new language in the bill, communities that are paying above the FY08 floor still have that punitive rate ascribed to them. The thought being that if you're under the 08 floor, maybe you just can't pay it. You don't have the money, so we don't need to punish you. The rate to make the system whole is fine. But if you have salaries above the floor and you're not paying the full amount because you just don't want to, then the punitive rate applies.
Is that it?
Yes, just one more if I may. On a somewhat different subject. The ACCA exclusion, what call were you making in the CS or did CNRA make that caused ACCA to fall away? I mean, can you explain that just a little more?
Yes. So what we found in the research on the bill was that of the five communities that this applies to, which are ACCA, St. George, Pelican, Anderson, and Galena, mm-hmm. ACCA actually had salaries above its FY08 floor. So despite their declining population, their salaries had been going up. So if we applied this bill to them, they would actually have the net effect of having their floor increased rather than decreased.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux probably 3 minutes ago. Any further questions before we go on?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to begin with, probably it's best to go a little bit back in time and talk about Senate Bill 125 and how we got to where we are. In Senate Bill 125, there was a move to bail out municipalities that had gotten underwater on their PERS system. The method that they used to fix that was to take what were siloed systems where each municipality and the state of Alaska themselves were their own entities in terms of administering their PERS systems. And what SB 125 did was take them all and put them all together into one large system, and the state also put a considerable amount of money into that system to try and get out of the unfunded liability situation we were in. In doing that, they required that every PERS employer pay 22% of their gross salaries every year into the system, unless their gross salaries were less than what they were in fiscal year 2008, in which case they must pay 22% of what the fiscal year 2008 salaries is. And that's what's called the 08 floor. Now, the purpose behind this was what was feared was if we did not put some limiting factor on the payment requirements, is that municipalities would simply lay off workers and hire contract employees in order to reduce their payment into the PERS system. That obviously would have detrimental effects to the system, so that's why the 08 floor was put in place. I think what we probably did not acknowledge is that there would be reasons above and beyond simple gaming of the system, so to speak, where they might actually have to get rid of employees. And I think Galena is kind of the perfect example. Galena, after the 08 floor was set, they had their Air Force base move out. They lost 30% of their population, and their gross salary shrunk from $1.5 million in the 08 year to $765 million in FY12. And that's due to a loss of employees, people moving out of town, you know, the economy tanked. And with that kind of difference, you know, almost half of your salary base, there's no way you're going to be able to make your 22% payment on that original 08 year. You just don't have the money. So we're in the situation where every year they're making their payment on their base salaries because it's the most they can make. The difference of that and the 08 year is then charged an annual 12% against them. So they're in this situation right now where every year they're in debt to the state and then additionally in debt to the state based on the 12% interest. So what's the net effect of this? Well, that time will tell. The city can't afford to pay the debt. The only recourse the state really has is to garner their revenue sharing, in which case now they can't even pay the 22% on their current salaries, so that's not really getting us anywhere either. They can't declare bankruptcy or get out of the system, but there's nothing to stop them from simply shutting off the lights, walking out, no one runs for office. And if that's the case, then the state is stuck with the entirety of the liability rather than the portion of the liability that Galena finds themselves unable to pay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Jones.
Thank you. Mr. LeBeau, where's the last statement written? I mean, I don't doubt that someone would have to pick up the pieces, but is that statutory?
We are the final. The buck stops with us.
So if I may, well, you're talking about essentially a city going bankrupt.
Not legally, but for all intents and purposes, the city just ceases to function. It becomes a ghost town. It would still exist in law, but only there.
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Paul, just to understand this correctly and also to make a little correction, I think everybody got it, but Galena's base had been $1.5 million, and then it was $765,000. You said $765
million. Oh, yes.
Just to make sure. So I understand correctly, since it went drop, they are now paying 22% on the $765,000. Is that what you're saying? And so that difference, that the 22% they're not paying on the gap, is where they're accruing their debt plus the 12% interest on that debt. Is that correct?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, that is absolutely
okay,
correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hito.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Paul. So what is the total outstanding debt that Galena owes currently, if it's been increasing over the past several years?
Oh, actually, Representative Keto, through the chair, I only have numbers up to FY14, but the number I have for that is $1.5 million.
Thank you.
And I think that hits a problem that we have. The two fiscal notes we have were from March 2013. The breakdown by city and borough was January of 2013. I think before the next meeting, we're going to have to get more accurate fiscal notes and a more accurate total of the city, so we really can get a grasp on the scope of the problem. But off of two-year-old numbers is going to be fairly difficult.
And Representative, Mr. Chairman, I think the administration has been waiting until we got to our second committee of referral to get us that fiscal note, as it requires an actuary. And so since the guys spend real money on it, they wanted to wait until the bill's in its most final form before issuing that.
Oh, great. Representative
Tilton. Tilton. Chairman Olson, that is correct what Mr. LeBeau has stated. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee did look into trying to get a fiscal note more updated, but it was presented to us that it does take an actuarial and that it would cost a significant amount of money, and they wanted to wait till it moved on to its next committee referral. So
this has to be like a center control.
And Mr. Chairman, considering the changes that were made in Community and Regional Affairs, that was probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm. That's scary. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid to ask what let's save that for later. Please continue.
That would bring us to Section 2 of the bill, which I think in the explanation of changes actually covers it. It was a pretty major change between what the original Section 2 was and what Section 2 is now, and I think the explanation of changes pretty much covered all of Section 2.
Okay, 1.5 times.
Well, 1.5 times is the original rate. What it does is it takes for communities that are paying at the floor, instead of paying 1.5 times, they're paying 1 time.
Please continue.
The other thing we have left is the retroactivity clause in Section 3. And this would simply go back in time to July 1st, 2009 and would forgive the amount that they've been delinquent on between then and the passage of this bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Questioner?
Yes. Yes. I thought you'd forgotten
my name. We have lots of time. Pardon me?
I thought you were saying that.
Thank you.
No.
Andy?
Thank you. Mr. LeBeau, where is that cost reflected in the fiscal note? Retroactive feature.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, that cost you won't see until we get the fiscal note from the actuary. Okay. I would make a point of clarification, though. With the new rewritten Section 2, the retroactivity clause wouldn't be a straight forgiveness on the loan or on the amounts due. It would be a straight forgiveness on amounts due who are paying below the floor, who have lost their population. But on delinquent amounts of people who have not lost population but are paying based on the floor, the difference, it would go back and their delinquent amounts would then be at an interest rate of 8% instead of 12%. And if I didn't get that across, I can take another shot at it.
Representative Fido.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'd just add a comment that really this is not a cash cost to the state of Alaska. It's a reflection of a not receiving revenue. So it's not as though we're going to be paying. It's that money will not be coming into the state.
That is correct. The system is legally bound to not make cash distributions to anything other than retirement costs. So you're absolutely correct. It's foregone revenue.
So we wouldn't be paying until retirement. It wouldn't have an impact until retirement.
Correct.
Representative Hughes.
Okay. Well, then doesn't it mean, though, if they're making less of a contribution that the state has to make it up? What am I missing here?
Representative Hughes through the chair. On that one, I'd like to call up a lifeline because it does get complex.
Before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge we've been joined by Representative Colbert, and we do have a full committee. Please continue.
Yeah. If I may, in order to address Representative Hughes' question, can I call up Mike Barnhill?
Mr. Barnhill. Mr. Barnhill's been a stranger for a while, but he's spent a fair amount of time in that chair. Welcome back, and please state your name and affiliation.
Mike Barnhill, Policy Analyst, Office of the Management and Budget. Through the chair, Representative Hughes, the way it works is if we don't collect revenue in a particular year, that all things being held equal, that counts as an actuarial loss for the year. And all actuarial losses and gains are summed by the actuary and then amortized over a 25-year period. So it would add to the unfunded liability, and then it would add to state assistance that the state pays per statute and appropriation.
Thank you.
So basically it's costing us on the back end instead of on the front end.
The state assistance, Mr. Chair, the state assistance would roll into the state assistance in the next fiscal year.
So would it be safe to assume that when we get due fiscal note in, it's going to be significantly higher than $187,000?
Mr. Chair, the actuarial analysis, my understanding, was completed last week, and so it's moving through the fiscal note process. Should be provided to the sponsor and the committee in short order. And I believe the amount is going down somewhat. And that may be the product of ACCA being pulled out.
Or new math.
Mr. Chair, things change every year.
Representative Hughes.
Well, if we're changing the rate from 12% to 8%, it seems like it would go up as far as this status. I guess the the revenue coming in would go down, but then the state assistance would go up. Is that right? Oh, gosh.
You know, probably the best thing, Mr. Chair, is just to wait for the note, and then we'll have a less than hypothetical discussion about it and any misunderstanding that I may be presenting at the moment can be cured at the time.
Okay.
So the retroactivity would probably have an impact on it as well.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure it would. I know in the previous years, when the fiscal note came out, the fiscal impact for the first fiscal year was quite a bit larger than the fiscal impact for subsequent years, and that was because of the retroactivity. So you had, you know, 4 years of fiscal costs all lumped into one.
Any questions for the lifeline? Mr. Barnhill, any further comments? Or
I'm happy to answer additional questions. With me in the room is Kevin Worley, Chief Financial Officer for the Systems, and online is Kathy Lee, Chief Pension Officer for the Pension Systems. And collectively, we can try and answer any questions. The Walker administration supports this bill in concept. I think just to give additional context to what Mr. LeBeau has provided, since 2008, the state has been sort of in continuous examination of what is the appropriate relative participation by the state and the collective municipalities in paying down the unfunded liability. And this is just one more area where we can discuss that. We had fairly protracted discussions last session about that, and through the appropriation of the $3 billion and the extension of the amortization in an additional 9 years, the municipalities ended up, as a result, participating to a greater level than they had before in paying down the unfunded liability, and that happens through the extension of the anticipated time in which municipalities will pay at that 22% cap level. So this is yet another context in which we're examining that relative share. And in this particular case, I think it's fair to characterize that the cost shifting that this bill presents is fairly de minimis.
Speaking only for myself, I don't think I have any questions until we get the rest of the numbers. I think we'd be doing it all over again the second time, but I think we can represent Hughes.
I do have one question that's not so specific to the numbers, but one of the reasons I think, Paul, you were explaining was to make sure that the floor was set so that employees weren't being laid off and using contract employees. Is there anything as we're looking at it from year to year with these municipalities to see what they've done with staffing to ensure that that's not happening, even though the population might be declining and the salaries paid out are going down, to make sure that there isn't contracting going on also? Or
Representative Hughes, through the chair, I think you might be getting at two different things, so I'll try to address them both. One is making sure that in the implementation of this bill, we continue to have a backstop against that contracting of employees rather than paying PERS people, and that's why the floor simply resets to 2012 for those communities rather than going away. The second part, if you guys take a look in your packet, you should have a list with highlighted yellow and blue. There's about 23 communities in there, and those are the communities that have been affected by the floor. And when you look in the furthest left column, you can see what their employee count was for 08, and the furthest right column, you can see what their employee count was for 2012. The remainder of what is shown within this is the actual gross salaries, and if you look down each column, you can compare each fiscal year going out from 08 to 08 to see what the relative gross salaries were to that FY 08 floor. And then in comparing the far left and far right column, you can can see what happened with employees. So if you look at Galena, you can see that they went from 35 employees to 17 employees. The reason being they just couldn't afford to support 35 employees anymore.
And to help the committee out, we do have Kathy Wasserman, who will be coming up shortly, the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, that will probably have additional information to share with us on that specific issue, and probably several others. Representative Ledoux.
So could you tell us what the problem would be if that some of these municipalities went to contract employees?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, the problem being that they are still required to pay 22% of their fiscal year 2008 salaries. So even if they got rid of all those employees, they would still have to make a 22% payment to the PERS system based on 08 numbers.
Followed.
So if this bill passes, as long as they're not contract employees, the amount that they'd have to pay would go down, but if they were contract employees, that it would stay at 22%? I'm just confused.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, any existing contract employees would be unaffected by this bill. This bill only affects PERS employees. So if they had, as Galena did, 35 PERS employees in 2008, and now only for 2012 only had 17 PERS employees, now the new floor they would have to pay would be based on those 17 employees.
Just one more follow-up?
Sure.
So what does this have to do with contract employees, period? That's where I'm just getting confused.
Oh, okay. So that takes us back, and I'm sorry, I'm not sure if you were here when we discussed Senate Bill 125, which is kind of what brought us to where we are now, which is when we created the PERS system we're currently under, there was a floor payment of 2008 set as a backstop, as a disincentive for municipalities to fire PERS employees and take on contract employees in order to reduce their liability to the system.
Thank you.
There's M. Culver.
You know, this issue is also kind of tied to the, this is declining employment and then the liability accrued for paying the PERS system. Then we have the termination study, so you can't even delete a position, and this is going to be a problem because as our economy contracts, especially if there's no additional or there's less school funding and revenue sharing as all these agencies are tightening their belts, we're going to see a lot more of these problems, and we're going to need a comprehensive fix. This is just one fix for specific communities that fall within these guidelines, but maybe director there could kind of give us what's the big picture looking like as far as unfunded liability for declining employment and positions that are being phased out in non-state entities, cities, school districts, and the like.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, what you're referring to is what we've called over the past several sessions the termination costs or termination studies issue.
Yeah.
And that is not encompassed by this bill, but it has been encompassed by other legislation, including a bill that was sponsored by Representative Thompson last year. And the way that works, in 2008, there were basically two essentially backstops to secure a certain level of participation by participating employers in the unfunded liability. One was the 2008 salary floor, which required, as Mr. LeBeau said, payment at the 2008 floor for each employer at 22%. The other was termination costs. So if an employer terminates, under statute, a group classification or department, then under the statute, a termination study has to be done to estimate what the new unfunded liability would be created by that termination. And the employer must pay that plus the past services costs associated with the terminated positions, all of the past service costs associated with those terminated positions, not capped at any particular level, until the unfunded liability is extinguished. And as the committee knows, we extended that time period from 2031 to 2039 last session. So the representative identifies an issue that has been before the legislature in the past. It's certainly something that the legislature may want to continue this session into next session, but it's not part of this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might make a clarification, and Mr. Barnhill can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, those termination studies apply regardless of whether or not those terminations would bring the municipality below their 08 floor.
I think that's correct, yes.
And as I recall, Mr. Barnhill's flat charge per employee.
Flat charge per employee
study.
Oh, the cost of the study itself
is
between
$2,500
and $5,000 to do a study. And then the study identifies the costs that the employer must pay per statute.
So it's pretty healthy disencouragement to go in that direction.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, that I can comment on whether it's an encouragement or a discouragement. It has certainly been perceived by the municipal employer community as a burden that impairs their ability to be flexible with how they staff their governments.
Representative Johnson, no. Well, I think at this time, thank you, gentlemen. We'll open it up to invited testimony, which I believe is Kathy Wasserman. Welcome back, Kathy. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. It seems like you were just here last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like I'm here every week. Kathy Wasserman, for the record, with the Alaska Municipal League. We've been working on PERS and all of the things that come with it for many, many years, just to make a small, not correction, but a small addition to what Mr. LeBeau said. We worked very closely with Senate Finance in the creation of SB 125, and it was not necessarily that 22% was arrived at because municipalities were underwater. It was because the state had no record and ability to divide the costs per municipality. So they threw everyone in together, municipalities and the state, and then a price was negotiated of 22%, which seemed to be fair enough to cover and pay off the liability. So all communities were involved, because some communities actually didn't have that big of a PERS bill, and others had a huge one. But we were all thrown in together because there was no means with which to separate out and tell what each municipality's liability actually was. Also, to put a number, as Mr. Barnhill mentioned, the last year, the $3 billion infusion, which AML supported and which we knew going in was going to have some changes that perhaps were not entirely positive for municipalities, but much like a house payment, we figured we could more afford an extended amortization rather than all at once. 9 years tacked on $2.5 billion in additional cost that municipalities will pick up in the 9 years at the end of that amortization. So when legislators say, and I've had a few say, you people need to pick up your fair share, we believe we are, and but this below the floor issue, which has especially impacted these now four small communities, is just proven to be a very bad business process. I mean, if due to the state's budget deficits, municipalities are there as well. We will see more cuts as well, and these small communities have. They have no wiggle room. They have no give. Being from one of these communities, I know well. They are down to, and most of these communities, even if contract workers were an issue in this issue, but they're not, could not afford to hire a contract worker. Pelican is down now to 3 employees. I think the top one makes $12 an hour, so it's not like they're living high on the hog. And there's just no money to pay their salary, much less this bill. It's just not going to happen. There is no means for bankruptcy in the state of Alaska for municipalities, but having come from a small municipality, I simply know I would just put the key in an envelope and mail it and to the state, and, you know, it's yours. Do with it what you want.
Which department?
I refuse to say. So we would like to see this bill pass. We've been working on this for many years. These are simply the communities that are in dire need. I remember 4 to 5 years ago when Galena got its first bill, and it was only $194,000. And it has escalated primarily due to the interest rates. And also, these small communities, as you know, they've had a flood. I mean, there's not much more that you can take away from these communities. And I don't know if this teaches them something. It may have been a rivenet to tell them you need to pay your bills, but you can only go so far. So we would certainly ask that you pass this bill out. We would love to see some success on this bill. So I'll stop there.
Well, the other problem is they don't have much of a tax base. I mean, my communities are both under 10,000 by a long ways, but they're big enough to where they can generate revenue more likely than going in a number of the cities on the list.
Yes, Representative. And then tribal lands also and take away their ability for much of that.
Representative Ledoux.
So how much would it save? Would it save the 4 communities each year? Do you know? And I'm sorry, I came in a few minutes late, so maybe that's already been talked about.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I don't know what their payment is per year. You would have to ask Mr. Worley that, or perhaps Mr. Barnhill. I don't know what their payment is per month, per year. I don't get into that with them.
I'd like to do that at some appropriate time.
Certainly. We're going to have all the numbers within a week or so. We'll probably do it when we have current numbers in front of us as well. And I'm sure we're going to be able to get everybody back.
Because I can't quite understand how it could save the communities so much. And looking at this fiscal note and then the comment that with the changes, it might be a lower fiscal note. The money has to go somewhere.
Yeah, that's the other issue. We have the next set of numbers in front of us. We'll be able to quantify it a bit.
But Representative Ledoux, through the chair, also, as you might realize, the relative percentage of money to the city of Galena may not look like much on the state's behalf.
Gotcha.
You can bet.
Understand.
It's a lot from Galena's. And I believe Mr. Barnhill said, or Mr. LeBoll said, that they had 38 approximately employees, and they're down to 17. So that's basically half. So the 22% that they're paying now, they're going to be paying below the floor on easily half of the people that they had at one time. So, you could do the math maybe very quickly, but I think Mr. Barnhill and Mr. Worley would be able to better give you those figures, and waiting, I think, for the fiscal note will be helpful as well. So that concludes my testimony. Thank you, Mr.
Any further questions for Ms. Wasserman? Thanks again, Kathy.
Thank you.
Next up, let's go off map to got a couple of mayors, I'm guessing. Chandra Huntington, Galena.
Yes, my name is Shonda Huntington. I'm the city manager for Galena.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing me today. Before serving as a city manager, I served as a city clerk for 6 years. I was born in Galena. I grew up here. I raised my 4 children here. And I'd like to comment on some information relating to Galena's population decline, the base closure, and the effects it had on the city's payroll and finances. The Air Force Base officially closed in 2008 following a multi-million drawdown. In 1990, before the base realignment, Galena's population was 847. Galena has always been a small city, and the base was the driver of the economic activity. According to the 2000 census, the number of residents, which does not include all the Air Force personnel, was 675. That number has dropped to 470 with the 2010 census. 205 people may not seem a lot, but it represents a 30% decrease in the city's population between the two censuses. 30% of the residents moved away, but the decline in the city's economical activity was much greater. For FY 2008, the current floor year, Galena's salary total was $1.5 million for 36 employees. Therefore, Galena's annual minimum contribution is $332,000. In FY 2012, the amended floor year, Galena's payroll was $765,000 for 17 employees. Between FY 2008 and FY 2012, Galena's payroll was cut in half, reflecting the decrease in population and economic activity. Galena currently an annual minimum PERS contribution of $332,000 is nearly half of the city's FY12 total payroll cost. According to a four year of 2012 for cities that experienced a drastic decrease in population change, Galena's minimum contribution to $168,000. For Galena, the difference in PERS contribution between 2008 floor and the FY 2012 actual payroll is $164,000. This difference will continue going forward, creating an ever-increasing obligation. By statute, any amount unpaid accrues interest at 12%. This ever-increasing obligation adds to an already stressed situation. The city's financial situation was so severe in FY 2009 that we had to require a low interest loan through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank to deal with severe cash flow crisis that was preventing us from being able to secure a fuel, heat, and electricity. Simply putting it, Galena can't pay its bills, the lights would go out. Reasonably adjusting the floor year for several impact cities does not mean that the city will pay the minimum amount only. Modifying the floor year changes Galena's minimum annual contribution from 332 to 168. The actual contribution may be higher. For FY 2013, Galena would in fact pay more than the minimum, amended a minimum. For FY 2013, Galena added one employee for a total payroll of $895,000. For FY 2013, Galena's contribution would have been above the 2000 floor by approximately $30,000. This amendment simply recognized the reality of the drastic population decrease experienced by some Alaskan cities. Using a clearly defined metric, 25 decrease in population according to 2000 and the 2010 census. The base closure has been very difficult for Galena. As previously noted, Galena required a low interest loan through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank to secure fuel for heat, electricity in FY 2009. In the last several years, Galena's finances have stabilized. There have been indicators of recovery from the decline. We cannot say what will happen to Galena's population long term, but we believe that we turned a corner in terms of population and finances. The city of Galena is adjusting to a new reality following the base closure and the loss of 30% of its population. This amendment is one part of the adjustment. I became a city manager during a difficult period for the city. Our finances have stabilized somewhat over the last several years, requiring the city of Galena to pay the pay per contribution owed by much larger city weakens Galena and threatens its ability to provide any contribution to PERS. We are optimistic that the city will become strong and even grow over time. If and when Galena becomes a city as it was in 2008, the city will be required to pay a PERS contribution comparable with that size in that payroll. We will do so gladly. But it's not that city right now, and the oversized PERS contribution inhibited from becoming so. Recognizing the reality of the drastic declining populations is a matter of simple fairness. The amendment recognizes this and ultimately promotes the goals of PERS, ensuring that Alaska municipalities continue to contribute their fair share to the system. I would like to thank the committee for taking time today so that I may explain the importance of this amendment for communities like Galena that have seen a significant population decrease in the last decade.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Are there any questions for Ms. Huntington? Thanks again. John Carter, are you with us?
Hi, this is John Carter, Mayor, City of Galena. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you for joining us today, and please again for the record state your name and affiliation.
For the record, my name is John Carter, and I am the mayor of the community of Galena. And I'd like to thank the committee for taking time today so that I may explain the importance of this amendment for communities like Galena that have seen significant population decreases in the last decade. As you may know, the Galena forward operating location was closed by the U.S. Air Force. As part of the BRAC process, the Galena FOL closure was effective October 1, 2010, but had been in process for 4 years. The Air Force Base was the main source of employment for Galena residents. Not surprisingly, the base closure resulted in a reduction of the population. Galena had almost 50% more residents in 2000 than it had in 2010. Galena was again struck by hardship in the spring of 2013 when ice dammed the Yukon River and inundated the city, leading to a federal disaster declaration. The 2008 floor that's established by the current law exists to prevent a municipality from gaming the PERS system by contracting out work previously performed by municipal employees in order to avoid making ongoing contributions to PERS. The current minimum PERS contribution is based on the level of salaries that existed in 2008. This purpose does not account for Galena's situation. It was not intended, nor does it contemplate municipalities with sharply declining populations. The amendment does not change the PERS policy, but rather recognizes nuance. The amendment affects only communities that suffered a minimum 25% decline in population between 2000 and 2010, like Galena. To put that in perspective, the 25% threshold would represent the loss of 75,000 people from Anchorage or 8,000 people from Juneau. What would happen to Fairbanks if the borough's population declined by 30,000, while at the same time seeing the closure of Eielson and Fort Wainwright? The demand for municipal, administrative, and public services would decline sharply. So would the municipality's ability to provide these services, having lost the region's economic driver. This legislation, which moves the floor year from 2008 to 2012 for the communities that experience these huge losses, does not provide a loophole allowing Galena or any other community with a similar population loss between 2000 and 2010 to game the system now or in the future. The 2008 floor for these communities is replaced with the 2012 floor. Galena's budgeted payroll for FY 2015 is above the 2012 amount for 17 employees. Galena's circumstances are not a result of any choice the city made. The base closure and loss of close to one-third of the city's population was entirely involuntary. The relationship between a declining population and declining payroll is clear. Fewer residents equal fewer public employees equals lower public payroll. Based on the 2008 floor, Galena is required to pay an amount owed by a city substantially larger than Galena. Galena's required PERS contribution approaches half of the city's entire payroll. The 2008 law is overall a sound piece of legislation, furthering sound policy, but it does not account for all situations. It does not account for cities that have suffered massive population contractions. This legislation furthers the underlying policy goals of the regulatory structure. It helps ensure that municipalities are able to continue contributing to PERS while recognizing that a city cannot and should not have to make the contribution of a city that has a significantly larger population. Recognizing that Galena is not the same city it was before the base closed and 30% of its population moved away is simply good policy. Policy that helps ensure that Galena continues to contribute to PERS. Recognizing the reality of sharply declining populations is a worthy amendment and is just plain fair. Appreciate your time this afternoon, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mayor Korda? Well, Mayor, I'm looking around the table, and with the exception of one member that currently lives in Anchorage, all of us live in smaller communities, and the representative that lives in Anchorage lived in Kodiak for a number of years. I think you've got a crowd that's familiar with some of the issues of the smaller communities. And thanks again for participating today for the committee. We do have Kathy Lee from the Division of Retirement and Benefits online for questions. If anybody has any questions for Kathy. Seeing none, do we have anybody signed up outside? Anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? I'm going to keep the public testimony open, and I expect that we're going to have at least one more meeting after, at least 24 hours after we get the updated fiscal notes and the updated summary of the communities. And any further committee questions? With that, we will adjourn at 4:05.